Hello, this is the Love Letter Squad. I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen, and welcome to another half hour of Love Letters Live, where we talk to people about personal life and stories, and we live in a world of challenges and unexpected blessings and sometimes horrific experiences, sometimes experiences that seem awful, and we learn a lot from them. And every guest who is emotionally generous enough to share a story with us is an inspiration and a teaching and something that we probably need to know. I'm going to go, therefore, to our guest today, Ricky Entner, who's a marriage and family counselor, and Roberta Cole, who was a teacher many years ago, as she says, and is now a writer and speaker. And I say that because I know that when you're a speaker like that, you're also teaching so much. But yes, a speaker is what I meant to say. And they are together the co-authors of Caregiving from the Heart, Tales of Inspiration. And these two women met when they were 6 months old in the baby carriages, and they've been friends ever since, and came together on this over taking care of their mothers. So I want to go to you, and maybe, Roberta, you could just talk a little bit. I know you had mentioned earlier that your mother was in a stage of Alzheimer's, and Ricky, your mother, when you were taking care of her, you were making her able to live independently at home. So I want to talk to each of you about that. So do you want to start with...
Yeah, we were actually doing the same thing, but we were doing it for different reasons, mm-hmm. you might say. Ricky was working to keep her mother independent. My mother was suffering from a more serious, a serious kind of dementia, which is progressive. I mean, it doesn't start all at once mm-hmm. in one fell swoop, but
I wanted to ask you about that, because I've heard that people so often lovingly cover for family members who are clearly in the beginning stages of Alzheimer's, and you know, they deny it and they make it so that nobody has to really look at it. So at what point did you know you had to do something for your mother?
That's a really interesting question, because not only do the caregivers deny it, but the people who need care, the care recipients, mm-hmm. deny it. Because when they are suffering in the early stages of Alzheimer's, you know, they kind of go in and out of it, and they do lot of damage control, because there's some level of awareness, what's happening to me, and I want to cover for it.
Sure. And are they embarrassed, do you think, partly?
Oh, terribly embarrassed. Mm-hmm. And I think that there really is a tremendous coming to terms on both sides, you know, and if you are the caregiver, the enormity of the pain is just unbelievable, because you're seeing this unfold and happen, and you want to stop it, and you're almost angry. I remember there were times when I would actually correct my mother, or I would say to her, well, you just said that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it would hit me, and I'd say, Roberta, get with the program. She's not changing. You mm-hmm. have to.
Oh, that's such a good thing to talk about.
How did
you do that?
Well, it's hard. It really is very hard. And, you know, we even have an interesting story in the book. It's one of my favorites, where a child goes to visit her father. And she gets out of the car, and, you know, her arms are open, and she's all excited about seeing him. And he shows no sign of recognition. None. And so she walks up to him, and he asks her, are you, uses her last name, and she says, well, no, I'm married, that's not my name. And he starts all over again asking her, well, about her husband, and how's everything going, and she says, well, my husband died. And this happens over and over and over again. And then finally she gets it. And mm-hmm. the next time she goes to see him, she uses the name that he thinks she has.
Oh, how smart.
Difference does it make?
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't mean to laugh, but you're so right. What difference does it make? And he knows he's getting some nice, good attention? Yes.
Absolutely.
He does.
And
okay.
He feels comfortable, because on some level, you know, we don't know how much they really perceive and how much they really hear and what kind of cognitive level is still
yes.
going on. And you certainly don't want them to feel embarrassed about what's happening.
Right.
You know, it's bad enough without that.
Well, embarrassed or confused or, yes. you know, then they become defensive and, you know, that doesn't work well.
That's
got to
be a downward spiral for everybody.
Right.
So what about your mother and making her comfortable at home?
My mother actually lived independently just about up until the time that she died. But I would facilitate in a number of ways. So sort of in the last couple of years, I became the chef.
Oh.
And
you lived near her?
We lived about 30 miles apart, she was fortunate to end up in actually Rotary housing in Novato. And she had long ago given away her pots, and when she moved in, there was no cooking facilities. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, okay, I'll cook for you. And so,
cook and bring it to her.
So I would make several meals and bring them up, and she could still heat them up, and she could, you know, do a hamburger or something. But it was always interesting. I could tell, you know, she would look at some things and go, what's that? Because I'd make some, I guess, more exotic things mm-hmm. than she was used to. And I can always tell when she said, that was good, or you don't have to make that again.
Oh, so that's nice that she let you know in that way.
She did let me know.
Now, did she have Alzheimer's?
No. My mother was sharp as a tack until the end.
So what was it like between the two of you, given that the daughter had to take care of her? What was reversing the roles like for her?
I think it was hard for her.
Yeah.
You know, there's a story in the book, actually, that's called I Want My Old Life Back.
You want to tell us about that? Tell us that story?
You know, for a while, my mother lived in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she really was away from her friends who were north and counted on me to take her places. And she started to have to adjust her life around my schedule. And I think that that's very difficult.
Oh, I'm sure.
When someone realizes I can no longer drive, I've lost my independence, you know, I can't come and go as I please, I think that that is a huge loss.
Mm-hmm.
And it was difficult. And wanting to go back to when I could do the things I wanted to do, when I wanted to do them, the way
yes.
I wanted to do them. And I think we have to be cognizant that for people, that's very difficult.
So what would you say to people in a way of advice, how to handle that? For people who are new to it and it's taking either of you.
Yes.
Roberta.
I don't think there's a simple answer. I think perhaps the best way to go about it is to just make doing new things a new way mm-hmm. a fun experience. For example, I know with couples, you go out to dinner and you go to a pretty dressy place. Well, you don't have to stick to those same things. You can go to a place that's easier for the person to mm-hmm. navigate and mm-hmm. still have a good time. And it's just really having an open mind and picking up the cues. In terms of children, I think it's a little bit trickier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to use a little psychology maybe and let your parent think that they're a force and they're involved and not that you are ruling their lives, really, and just kind of take your cues from them.
Well, I would guess, I mean, you're saying that so sweetly and sensitively, that if you are letting your parents call some of the shots and ruling their own, you know, making, then they are in some way ruling their own lives.
They
I mean, it's
and
not
there,
just...
And there are ways in which they can do that. It may not mean driving the car.
Yes.
You know, that's a little risky at a certain
right.
point. And there are conversations that certainly need to be had around that.
You know, I had a friend who was very, when he was a very old man at some point, and one of the things he was angriest about, and he said to me once, he said, I'm so tired of saying thank you all the time. Now, go ahead.
Well, it's very difficult to realize that you're dependent on mm-hmm. someone.
Yes.
You know, and these are adults.
Yes.
You know, they're not 6 years old. And
well, even 6 year olds don't want to be dependent,
well,
right?
Well, that's true.
And they all have to say thank
you. But they've had less experience. They haven't really gone through the,
right.
the place of being adults and then going back.
I'm wondering if that having to say thank you all the time is a way of saying I couldn't have done this myself. I couldn't have done it.
I think sometimes that's a recognition
yeah.
of that, or just feeling like you have to impose on people.
What are some of the most inspirational stories in your collection of inspirational stories?
Gee, there are a lot of them. Every time I
why don't you just share a couple with us so we
every time I reread these, I get moved. There's one that I think is really kind of interesting because one of the dilemmas might be when is it time to move, you know, either and children, it's not just children who are caregiving, it's partners,
mm-hmm.
it's friends and relatives. And so when is it time to be able to move someone from independent living to perhaps the next stage?
I'm so glad you're saying that because that was really my next question. Okay.
And so that's a very difficult issue. My experience has been that people go, no, I don't have to. I can manage. And, you know, then there are the little signs where maybe the management is calling and saying, I'm concerned about this person's safety, or you notice there are burnt pots.
Mm.
And it starts, the condition starts to get unsafe.
And how do you get a person to acknowledge him or herself? Go ahead.
Yeah, if I may just join in, there's a story in the book called Prescription for Living, mm-hmm. which I think is a wonderful example of what you're saying, Janet. And I know it's funny because we applied it in our own lives, my husband and I, when my mother-in-law was suffering from a very serious eye condition and was virtually blind. Mm-hmm. And, oh, yeah, sure, I can do everything, until she was putting the nail polish remover in her eye instead of the glaucoma drops.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and we intercepted that.
Uh-huh.
So it went on and on, no, I don't need any help, and it was really awfully painful. And suddenly I remembered this story in the book, Prescription for Living, where the son actually said to the doctor, would you write a prescription that says patient should no longer live alone?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, would you please write a prescription by which you could put the eye drops in the nail polish remover bottle?
Yeah.
that
might be an idea.
Solution. Yeah, but go ahead.
But it was magical because, you see, it wasn't coming from the kid.
Oh,
it was coming
smart.
From the doctor. And the doctor knows, you know, the doctor is God. I mean, if the doctor says it, it must be the case.
And so she accepted that graciously.
So, absolutely.
How wonderful.
So there are little things, and it's not as if we're being malevolent or we're tricking the person. You know, it's just a new kind of dialogue, really.
Well, go ahead.
Oh,
you made that little sign because you want to say we're tricking them a little?
Tricking them maybe just a little. But perhaps, you know, looking at what's in their best interest and mm-hmm. seeing the landscape from a very different view.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you need to make that call, just as you need to make the call, it's time to take the car keys.
Oh, that's awful. That's hard, isn't it?
Very, very difficult.
Life is just filled with stories of that. Did you have an experience, each of you, with that particular day?
I have a great story about that. It's not a directly personal experience, but a friend of mine told it to me. He went down to visit his father and rode around a little bit with him and said, this can't continue. Mm-hmm. It was really god-awful scary. So he tried to open a conversation. It wasn't going well. It was very difficult. So what he did was he just scooped up the keys and left and went home, went back up north. He'd gone down to Florida from New York or somewhere, took the keys, and as soon as he's walking in his apartment, of course, he hears the phone ringing, and he mm-hmm. knows very well who it is.
Mm-hmm.
And his father says to him, you know, I can't find my car keys. He says, I'm looking all over, and I always put them in the same place, and I just can't seem to find them. Maybe you're right. Maybe I should stop driving, because maybe I'm beginning to forget things.
Oh, that's good luck that story worked out that way, don't you think? Yes, I can. But
so, you know, I'm not suggesting that everybody go and take the car keys, but
it's worth a try.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly worked for this guy, but it's important to open that dialogue and to be creative, and if it doesn't work, there are many ways to skin a cat.
And perhaps open it maybe earlier than when you're desperate.
Well, except that if you open it earlier, and you want to do it while a person still can get around...
Well, I just mean that the dialogue about how would you like to handle it if we ever get to that point...
Well, we never will.
Well,
yeah. Okay,
good.
So maybe
that's good, and you know, that hopefully that will happen. But what if?
And maybe some people. I've actually known a couple of people who were nice and gave up the driving voluntarily because they didn't want to hurt somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Right, which is
critical. Yeah. Yes. My goodness. So
can we just talk a little bit about how we did this?
Please.
We lived in two separate cities. Mm-hmm. Roberta was in New York and I was in San Francisco. And Roberta would share some of the stories of, you know, what was going on with her mom. And I said, gee, Roberta, you know, you're a writer. You should write some of those. And so she started to do that. And I would share some of the stories. And she said, gee, some of those are kind of interesting, funny. And so what we realized was we probably weren't the only two people experiencing this, and so we decided to collect stories.
Now, did you collect stories from all kinds of people?
We did, and people love to share stories. I have to tell you, when I would be speaking about the book, I would say, does anybody have any questions?
Oh, you would do this when you were on one of your speaking?
Yeah, and people would get very quiet. Suddenly no one had a question. Mm-hmm. I said, does anybody have a story they'd like to share? Mm-hmm. And it was like opening a faucet. Mm-hmm. And stories really are, we even have a little piece in here called The Power of Story.
Tell us.
Because sharing stories, hearing stories, and telling stories is very therapeutic.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the format of your book for those people in our listening audience who haven't read the book, that it is a, rather than a how-to book, it's a series. Every chapter is a different story that you can relate to.
And before we go any further, for those of you who have not read it, would you please tell us your website and where they can find this book? Because
the best place to
really
find it, it's available on Amazon. It can be ordered through bookstores. It is a collection of stories. It's not a how-to book. It's not a clinical book. And it's
but it lets you know you're not alone.
It lets you know a lot you're not alone. Mm-hmm. All the stories are absolutely true. You can take from it what you will. They're funny and they're sad and they're human. And caregiving certainly is not romanticized. There's nothing fun about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we think very much in dualities. And we think before we're in the situation, caregiving is just, you know, can be a burden and can be awful and can be wrenching. And certainly it can be all of those things. But you know what? It can also be an opportunity.
Well, I'm going to ask you about that, each of you. How did you change from this experience?
I just want to add that, that mm-hmm. the last section are stories from the recipients of care.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that that's so important to be able to understand, you know, sort of the other side.
Of course.
And,
Thank you. You
know, many of those are incredibly touching. And I think, you know, in terms of how writing this has, you know, impacted me or changed me, I have much more sensitivity to the issue. And recently I became a caregiver to an aunt who actually lived out of town, so we did friends and relatives who were long distance caregiving, and it really helped me to know the perspective and to approach it with more awareness of what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was very helpful.
I want to emphasize again that there is no right way to caregive. Mm-hmm. It's not as if there's this great list and you go down and check it all off,
mm-hmm.
because every situation is different.
But you're encouraging people to look at what?
Well, I'm encouraging people to just take each case as it goes along and know, talk about love letters. I mean, this book is a love letter to our mothers, really.
Mm-hmm.
Because we took things away from it. We are now able to look at life a little bit differently and to see the beauty. You know, initially this book was called Lessons of a Cactus Flower. And I'll tell you how we came up with that.
I'd like to hear.
I had seen, I don't know if our listeners are familiar with cactus flower plants, Christmas cactuses.
Yes.
Or Christmas cacti,
yes.
whatever that might be called. But they look like a regular cactus until they bloom.
With those lipstick bright
profusion
uh-huh.
of
yes.
crimson flowers or
yes.
Beautiful. Uh-huh. And so I had one of these little cactus plants in my house. I had never seen it before. And I come down one morning and I see it's this explosion of color. It was just fabulous. So that became a metaphor for seeing the beauty in what isn't immediately beautiful.
What is the beauty?
Well, the beauty is that you get a chance to really connect with someone on a very basic, almost primitive level.
Mm-hmm.
You get to help them. You get to see that, you know, you can endure things and you have a kind of strength that you didn't know you had.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Ricky?
I think that there's a lot of beauty in being able to be there for someone else,
mm-hmm.
particularly someone else who really was there for you.
Yes.
And
I think there's something about, you know, there's so many different people to take care of course, but when it comes to mothers, the people who saw us into the world and never turned their back on the yuck and the mess and the difficulties, there's something very nice about not turning your back on the equally as important task of seeing somebody out of this world. What do you think?
But a difficult thing mm-hmm. I found is that there were people I spoke to. Now, I had a very, and I think Ricky did too, we were very fond of our mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was that feeling that we wanted to give back. But there were people we spoke to mm-hmm. who had very, their relationships were very challenging. And they didn't feel 100% good about this. And it was kind of hard duty in a lot of ways.
How much worse would they have felt if they had not done it later, though?
Yeah. And, you know, as Roberta said, there's not one way to do this. And particularly when we're looking at long-distance caregiving, today families are spread all over the country, all over the world, and it just may not be convenient to drive up the block.
Of course, of course.
And we have one story about, I could look for it, but where someone hired a daughter.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
A surrogate daughter.
Right. And so they couldn't be in the town, but they could find somebody who could be there who
could do that.
Do you remember?
You also find a great deal, a great many situations where parents who move away and then become elderly and infirm and need caregiving move back. Didn't you find that, Ricky?
Mm-hmm.
Many do. I know that there are a lot of parents who move to Florida who are moving back north. Because they moved to Florida to retire, and their kids are in the north.
Yes.
And as their world shrinks and their friends are no longer around, they end up moving back.
It seems to me that that's kind of a giving thing. I understand what it serves for the purpose who needs to be taken care of. It seems to me a very giving thing to do for your children, too, to make it easier for them to look after you or at least be near and not have to feel guilty about being so far away. So that's interesting.
It's a very difficult thing when you're 3,000 miles away and a call comes and thinking, oh my God, do I have to get on an airplane right now? And
well, of course you do. Yes.
And then, of course, there's the issue of families and siblings and what it can do to a family. And, you know, there's always a person who feels they're the person in charge, or invariably the brother or sister isn't pulling their weight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's complicated.
Yes. And people who want to be good children at the last minute, maybe when they haven't. But whatever it is. So I want to ask. Oh, go ahead.
And also that there may be siblings who have different ideas about what the best way to proceed might be. And they get to have to work out all of those differences.
Well, I'm so glad that you did this book and that you're bringing it to us. And I want to ask you a question as we are about love letters. I understand what a tribute and love letter this is to both your mothers. If you were to write a love letter right now to anybody else in your life or your mothers, who would you write to? Ricky.
I'd write to my husband. We just celebrated our 44th anniversary.
Oh, how wonderful.
I love him dearly.
Okay. And was he particularly obviously supportive and helpful to you through this?
He was incredible.
Okay. So that's a good love letter to write, just to let him know. Uh-huh.
Not very creative, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to say the same thing.
Very
creative. We're on 42 years.
That's wonderful, because everything said is said in some different way. What would you want to tell yours?
Well, just for being there, the way I was there with my mother, he was there with me.
And what did he bring to it in particular? We talk about love letters being really specific.
Well, just that I was on the right path, and that if I saw things a certain way, you know, maybe he could bring something to that as well.
And he did.
He was also very close to my mom.
So you're talking about his strengths.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And we need that. We need all the help we can get, let me tell you.
And being very cooperative. Sometimes caregiving involves some financial support.
Yes. And if you're lucky enough to be able to do that. And that's a big issue. How do you take care of people when there isn't any? Do you have anything about this on your website or anything to say to people when there is no financial ability?
I think that it's important to check the city or county or town and find out what services are available, because I think that you would be surprised to find that there are many that are available not aware of.
So people would call. There's usually an agency, a family service agency, or an elder. What would you say?
Depending where you live, there are many different facilities. And I think in general, Janet, the important thing to come away with is don't be afraid to seek support.
Okay, from others.
In every way, from others.
Yeah.
And that can come in many different forms. It can come in the form of a book. It can come in the form of a tape, possibly a therapist or just a support group.
Oh, even a book or a tape for yourself.
Yeah, or people going through similar situation where you can exchange feelings and stories. But don't feel you have to be alone in it or you're weak if you seek support or you're betraying the person that you're giving the caregiving for because you're not.
This is way too hard to have to do alone.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm sure that's true. And you're lucky that you have mates who helped you.
And we had each other.
Yes.
And we supported each other, which was sort of how this book started.
Because this was going on at the same time for you, right?
Yes, it was.
Well, my mother passed away before Ricky's mom did, but essentially it was. So it was also a bonding and a growing experience for both of us, and I think strengthened our friendship. So maybe there's a little love letter to each other there.
Oh, I'm so glad you said
that. There we go.
I try not to be the love letter police and make suggestions, but...
This is getting all too romantic here.
No, it should be. It should be, because there's so many... And, you know, I'm glad you said that, getting all too romantic, because we talk about love letters... being so outside the scope of romance. We've noticed in workshops, what is it, maybe 20% of the letters are romantic?
If that, depending on the audience.
Right, yes, that's right. And, you know, they're to parents who were deceased. I mean, I think a beautiful kind of love letter, by the way, is to write a letter to your deceased mothers and bring them up to date on your life. How are you doing? How are you doing without them? Is it okay? What strength did you get in seeing them and taking care of them? Wouldn't they like to know this? If you have children, wouldn't they want to know how your children are doing?
They certainly would. And, you know, then that way we wouldn't have to be just talking to them. We could write to them.
Well, I was going to say, and the beauty of that, you're laughing, but the beauty of that, even though you can't mail it to them, oh, good. Okay. Okay. Good. That's why you're laughing. I'm happy. So, but then who do you mail it to? You could mail it to your children. Dear Mom, I'm going to write to you, but I'm mailing it to your grandchildren because I want them to know what I'm telling you. Dear Mom, I'm writing this to you, but I'm going to mail it to myself just so I can read it whenever I want to and remind myself. So many things to do. And when you talk about this, you know, what's therapy? These love letters are just gold star. So there's so many things to do.
And when we are in the act of caregiving and it seems so impossibly difficult, so many people I spoke to after they lost the person they were caregiving for said, in a flash, I would go through it again if I could have them back.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming. And it's been wonderful hearing from you. And this is Janet and Teresa saying...
Well, bye-bye for now. Give us the name of the book one more time, please.
It's Caregiving from the Heart, Tales of Inspiration, Ricky Entner and Roberta Cole, and it's available through Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, and can be ordered at your local bookstore.
Thank you, ladies.
And we highly recommend
it. Thank you.
So thanks again to our listeners. Please join us this time every week. Until then, this is Teresa.
And Janet.
Saying bye-bye.
Bye.